The Napoleonic Era, Napoleon in Exile, 1815 to 1821, The Death of Napoleon, Part 2. Now, this is a much more detailed account of his last days, which run really from April the 26th until his death on May the 5th. And some of these are from different people's accounts of what went on. So I'm going to start with an event that occurred on April the 26th. At 4 o'clock in the morning, Napoleon called Montholon and told him with extraordinary emotion that he had just seen Josephine, quote, but she would not embrace me. She disappeared at the moment I was about to take her in my arms. She was seated there. She had not changed, still the same, full of devotion for me. She told me that we are about to see each other again and never more to part. She assured me of that. Did you see her? Montholon was noncommittal. He had no desire to interfere with something that gave Napoleon comfort. The chair had remained empty to his eyes. No fantasy touched his senses, and he went about changing the emperor's soaked garments, a difficult process not accomplished often enough. A comment in his diary read, quote, even the mattress was wet through, end of quote. Once in his last days, Napoleon slipped right down towards the end of his bed. Montholon asked him what he was doing, saw he was trying to ease himself up, and when the count assisted him, he complained of pain in the stomach and fell down. Montholon said his eyes turned upward in his head and he lost all recognition for some time. This happened a second time when he was raised and the pillows were placed against his back to support him. Montholon said he no sooner had him in place, then he threw up his arms and fell down, insensible again. They administered castor oil, but he immediately vomited it. And between 3 and 4 in the afternoon, Antomarchi came to Colonel Gorkier, saying Napoleon was dying. He might even die that day. Could Dr. Short, Dr. Mitchell be called? Gossip, conjecture, and consternation filled the homes on the island. The man who had been the lodestone of their thoughts for 5 years was dying. They felt a kind of sorrowful pride in him. His brilliant history, his defeat, his prestige, his greatness. He had been an enemy. But they remembered the days when he had ridden about the roads, smiled at the children, and given a Napoleon to anyone who did him a small favor. After some protest, the emperor consented to change his room and have a bed placed in the drawing room. The doctors thought that he would get more air there. Napoleon, asking if everything was ready, with great difficulty got out of bed, and refusing to be carried, reached the other bed with the support of Montholon and Marchand, crying, quote, I have no more strength, lay me down on my pelisse, end of quote. His feet and legs were swathed in hot towels, as had been done each time a collapse appeared imminent. As a great favor, Madame Bertrand was allowed to come in and sit a while. There had been a coolness since he found out that she was planning to leave St. Helena and take her husband with her. He asked that she might sit by the head of the bed and spoke of her recent illness. You are well now, he said. Your complaint was known. Mine is not. So I shall die. Most of the time his face was turned towards a little colored print of the King of Rome, one of two that had come for sale on the island and were sequestered by Lowe and kept in Plantation House until the suite through the grapevine heard about them. They were eventually procured for Napoleon. Lowe's reasons for retaining them were obscure, perhaps the result of some unpleasantness over the marble bust. He wanted no more pictures to be exhibited or distributed. Madame Bertrand talked a little, didn't stay long with the emperor in the dark and stuffy room. There was a keen desire on her part to be allowed to tidy everything, to give fresh sheets, to move his pillows. But knowing him, she felt anything she might offer would be refused. He was in the hands of his valets, who themselves did all they were allowed to do, his dominant spirit ruling them even in extremis. It was noted that even towards the end, the household implicitly obeyed his orders and accorded him the respect of royalty. He looked extremely lonely, and when Madame Bertrand shut the door behind her, she burst into tears. She came to him for a brief visit every day after that. On the 20th, Napoleon said to Finale in Antomarchi's hearings, quote, when I am dying, you are to prepare an altar in the next apartment, expose the Blessed Sacrament, and recite the prayers for the dying. I was born a Catholic. I want to obey its commands and receive its affords, end of quote. Antomarchi's face was expressive of his feelings, and Napoleon, seeing him standing at the foot of his bed, smiling scornfully as he listened to the conversation, called, your insults weary me. I can forgive your foolishness and your lack of skill, but a want of reverence, never. get out. He turned to the priest. When I die, you are to celebrate Mass and cease only when I am buried. The abbe dropped to his knees and kissed his hand, and now had the habit of lying over the side of the bed. The doctors, for some unknown reason, decided as a last resort to administer calomel, 10 grains. Marchand was reluctant, but fearing to object, mixed it in sweetened water. The emperor swallowed it with difficulty and tried to spit it out, and turned to Marchand, saying, "You are deceiving me too." But he was not distressed and later drank some more of the sugared water. He commenced to hiccup, the paroxysm lasting into the evening, and at night he vomited black matter, like coffee grounds, mixed with a little blood. Later the hiccup reasserted itself. None of the servants went off duty. There was subdued activity outside of Napoleon's doors, and comings and goings of orderlies, doctors, and servants. He refused to see Dr. Short and the naval chief surgeon. New faces would be of no avail, and he had no hope of alleviation. Only familiar hands would bring him any physical relief, if relief were possible at all. In his growing confusion during the final days, Napoleon muddled his doctors' names, spoke of O'Meara and Stokey, long since gone from the island. Then he would suddenly appear perfectly composed. Once he called for a pen and paper, and dictated a letter to the governor, to be sent the moment he expired. He also told Montholon that on his death he must show the governor his will. Later, unbelieving, Low asked Montholon to repeat the remark. Bertrand's appearance at the unusual hours worried him still. It brought home to him that they, like himself, knew he was about to die. It made the realization clearer, and he flinched from it. Later, Madame Bertrand remarked that he did not wish to die. Some lingering hope remained that somehow, somewhere, he would be reunited with his son. Marie-Louise had drifted from his thoughts to be more shadowy and unreal than the ghost of Josephine, whom he considered was near him on many occasions. At 6 o'clock in the morning before Napoleon's death, the shutters of the house were opened. He had gone behind the thoughts of drafts and too much light and was sunk in a coma of tranquility, his eyes fixed, his mouth open, his pulse just noticeable in a wrist that still remained plump. His hand covered the side of the mattress. His face showed by the growth of the beard that no one had dared to shave. Madame Bertrand was called and sat beside the bed. Later, the outdoor servants came in to see their masters for the last time, and they kissed the chilly, inert hand, some gathering in the corner of the room to wait and watch. There was silence in the house, where for a week there had been activity, day and night, from the departure of the grooms, the arrival of the doctors and the orderlies, keeping the lamps alight. On the road to Longwood, at 8 a.m., Sir Hudson Lowe received a communication from Dr. Arnault, intercepted by an orderly galloping on his way to the plantation house. Quote, "He is dying. Montholon prays I will not leave his bedside. He wishes I should see him breathe his last." End of quote. Lowe rode on past the guardhouse to the new Longwood house and walked about the empty rooms. Flatness of spirit kept him pacing uneasily past the still uncurtained windows. As a concession, he remembered the back quarter had not been enclosed, but in front he saw them as he went to every window, row after row, stretching from side to side. He began now that it was too late to consider if, after all, he had not made conditions too harsh for the prisoner. He had carried out Bathurst's and Castlereagh's wishes to the letter. The thought sustained him, but the spirit of the regulations bothered his conscience. He knew his actions had been neither better nor worse than their demands warranted, and now it was almost over, and somehow he felt his prisoner was gaining a release at the hands of a greater court of justice. He saw his orderly outside with the tethered horses, testing one of the iron railings. No more meetings with Gorkier's taking notes, and Janich later transcribing them in his beautiful script. No more requisitions for trees and bookshelves and horse feed. A chapter was closing even as he paced up and down, his thoughts centered with some relief on a triumphal homecoming, to rewards and to laudatory remarks. He had done his duty to the letter. The house echoed to his footsteps, and finally he rode away, glancing at Bertrand's cottage, where nobody was to be seen, and Longwood Garden, equally empty, and finally, to the doors of Longwood, closed, as always, to him. At 3 p.m., another note in the pencil came from Arnault. Pulse cannot be felt at the wrist now, and the heat is departing from the surface. He may not last out some hours. More waiting, more thoughts, replanning, certain growing excitement. At 5:30 p.m., Arnaud again writes, "He is worse, and respiration has now become hurried and difficult. A few minutes before 6 o'clock, just as the sun was setting, the final line was received, quote, he has this moment expired. He died at 10 minutes to 6, about the time of the evening gun." Now, from the standpoint of modern nursing, Polian received little skilled attentions. His sheets remained unchanged, mattresses soaked, and the window tightly shut. Any light there was coming in from storm lanterns shrouded by paper. In that atmosphere, he passed his last days. From the observance of his wishes, ordinary nursing care compatible with the time was not followed. He lay inert or struggled from bed to bed. Little camp beds, whose frames stood a few inches from the ground, his body raised perhaps 18 inches by 4 mattresses. The green silk curtains draped so that any whispers of air was kept from him. The low Bathurst papers made particular note that Montholon, being close to him, had heard his final words, but they were unintelligible. The legend that he says, "My army and Josephine," are imaginary. It's not something that Napoleon said. The watchers awaited the climax, and when it ended, as the sun was setting, Grand Marshal bent his knee beside the still figure and kissed his hand. Afterwards came all the members in his suite, in seniority, and the servants, the women, the Bertrand children, who had been fetched from the cottage by their mother. Even the daughter of Saint-Denis, a year old, was carried to give her baby salute to the cold flesh. At midnight, in a stillness now made more noticeable by the absence of the unusual household activity, Marchand, Saint-Denis, Perron, and Novarez attended to the body of their master and carried it from the deathbed to a second camp bed, which was put in place from the one that was taken. Vignali, the abbey, the priest, had laid a crucifix on the emperor's breast. Montholon observed that the emperor presented a youthful appearance. His mouth was contracted to one side and gave his face an expression of resignation. But he did not look more than 30. And now we come to the point where we have to deal with the autopsy and the funeral and the preparation of the body and the grave and all sorts of stuff like that. So it's a, you know, an unusual situation that you find everyone that I've given as a source for Napoleon at this time period has a little different view. This was a nice mix of all of those put together. So we have a little bit further to go. A few more shows before he goes into suspended animation, before we dig him up and bring him back to France. Now, the sources for this: Napoleon St. Helena by Martineau, Cachet de St. Helena by General Bertrand, Napoleon in Exile by O'Meara, Le Dernier Moment de Napoleon by Anton Marchi, Memoirs by Louis Marchand, With Napoleon at St. Helena, Dr. Stokey, The St. Helena Story by Madame Mabel Brooks.